If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to the Naked Professors podcast. This is a place where we have conversations about real, vulnerable, deep things.
We do, and today is no exception at all. This was very special. We talked today with a guy that comes from a very masculine industry, environment, a sporting world, and it was a moment in this podcast where I went, wow, this is what it's all about for us. This is somebody that's come on here and has bared their soul and has shared something they've never shared with somebody before, and it liberated them, and I hope it can liberate you today, guys, who are listening.
Jim was vulnerable from the word go because he freely admitted he turned up. He's passionate about mental health, but he doesn't really know. You know, no one's ever educated. Why would he know? But he came on and just had an open conversation with us, and I think he shared things that he's never said before, and powerful things. I actually thought there might have been a tear in his eye at one point. I really didn't. I was like, wow, there's so much emotion in this room, and to do that just with two guys was amazing. I absolutely loved that conversation.
And of course we're talking about Jim Hamilton, international rugby player, recently retired, has a wonderfully successful podcast himself, and he, for me, epitomise what we're trying to do.
One thing that we should say to everyone, because you can't see it when you're listening, but Jim's 6'8". He's a monster. He's full of tattoos. He is the alpha man. You know, you're creating the stereotype of an alpha man. There he is, Jim Hamilton. But for him to show us his heart was incredible, and it meant so much coming from a man like that.
Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Jim Hamilton.
Hello, everyone. And today is a very special guest. We've got one of the biggest men we could possibly fit in this studio. We've got an alpha man, someone who we're going to try and strip away that masculinity, that macho man. We're going to try and get beneath it a little bit and get into the perhaps a little bit more of the sensitivity of this macho man. And we'll get into it. We're welcoming today the massive, huge Jim Hamilton.
Yay.
Thank you very much. I mean, that was a great intro.
Was it?
Yeah. Macho, massive. Alpha, yeah. Muscly, athletic. I heard them words.
I didn't say muscly.
Oh, sorry.
I heard sensitive.
I'm a sensitive soul. But we can get into that. But thanks for having me. I'm just looking round the studio here, and we've got the Naked Professor montage. We've got three TVs with it on, and I can see two very nice backsides, two bums.
Well, with three
great
screens, it's six bottoms. Yes. You are spoiled today.
Yeah, so,
look at it.
I mean,
do you fancy doing that with us?
If you can airbrush me like you've been airbrushed, yes, definitely. Have you been airbrushed there?
No,
or not?
I just had to get the tattoo of the top of my bum taken off.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Falaraki 2001, baby.
Oh, really? Yeah.
He was worth it, though. Jim, thank you so much for popping along. We know you're a very busy man with your own podcast. You can give us some tips about podcasts in a second. We're here, we talk about mental health. We've had some wonderful guests on this show. Davina McCall, one of your friends, maybe Craig White, that you've worked with, I think, in the past.
Yep.
Now he works in the world of mental health. And the big topic for us is usually male masculinity. And you're a fantastic person for this, because from what I have known of you on your social medias and listening to your podcast as well, you are the typical rugby lad, lad's lad, man's man, but you do have an open side to you, another level, a certain depth to you as well. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. From the outside looking in, I mean, for me to say that is something that I've probably not come out and said myself, you know, that I am open, I'm trying to raise awareness for this kind of thing. I think it's probably been a little bit more organic. And as we've seen over the last couple of years, there's more and more, around mental health conversation being had. And like you mentioned, I'm in the podcasting world. Mm. And we've had a couple of players come on the podcast and speak about mental health. And that's kind of not triggered something, but it's kind of made me think about more of my mental health and think about the past and think about the future. And being the age that I am, and we were talking about ages just before.
We're the same age.
We're the same age.
Pretty much identical. November the 17th and November the 18th,
exactly.
1982.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we can relate to a lot of things then, having the same kind of influences as we were growing up.
Yeah.
So would you say that you're a modern man?
I don't know. It's probably the answer. I don't, because it is all very different now, isn't it? I think that I wanted to be an old school man, an alpha man. And I'm a dad, I've got four children, and our house is set up in the fact that my wife stays at home and I go out to work. You know, the old school, I'll go out, collect the wood, get the fish, go hunting. Mm. And I quite liked, you see how I said that, or that kind of way
that
role. That role and how we lived. But things are changing. I don't think I'm thinking completely on the opposite side. I couldn't stay at home and look after the kids all day. But I'd say that as it stands, I probably am in your typical mould of a kind of alpha male, you know, dad, husband, and man. I think, you know, having played rugby, a very macho, masculine sport. And then, yeah, I think my dad was in the military for years and kind of took on that role. But I think it is changing for the better. That's what I think. I've got two daughters amongst the brood of four. And I think it's changing for the better. But it's definitely got me thinking about who am I, what direction I'm going in, and where the world's going.
When you say it has got you thinking, what do you mean by that? What's kind of got you thinking? What's made you become more aware, perhaps, of who you are and where you want to go? And has that changed since you left the sport?
It is a difficult question. Still, that I don't know the answer to. Mm. I think it's more, you know, actually, my wife's dad, who's an old school kind of man, if you like, you know, he's in his 70, he might be 70 now, you know, owned his own business, and my wife's mum stayed at home and looked after the kids and did nothing else. And it's kind of, I look at my wife now and think, is that an existence where we're going to look back when I'm 50, when I'm 60, 70 years old, that we're happy with? You know, that she's potentially not gone and done what she wants to do, and it's all been about me going out for work, having these experiences, traveling around the world. So we, you know, but we are quite open in our household. We talk about them things. It's not a case of I just walk out the door and it's like, right, make sure the dinner's on when I get home. Mm. I might not be home. I'll be down the pub with the lads. It isn't that. I have a lot of respect for my wife and want her to make sure that she's enjoying what she's doing. And also that my daughters, you know, and my two boys, they see that mum has a worth, a self-worth, a life outside of just being mum. So, you know, that's where I am now. You know, I'm kind of new into this. I mean, I've only been retired from rugby for, you know, it's not even maybe 18 months now.
Would you say since leaving rugby, your relationship's changed a little bit? And is there any part of you that can show a bit more love and you can be a bit more sort of a bit deeper with her, because you don't need to be that macho rugby player anymore? You can be her husband a bit. Did you have to play a role at all? Is there any aspect of that?
Not really. I think, you know, again, like, I'm quite open. Like, me and my wife, like, we do talk a lot, and I've always been a guy that has spoken a lot. I mean, not as much on social media as I had now, and I didn't have a voice doing the podcast before. But, you know, my wife probably saw, or she's seen, the best of me and the worst of me, you know, in terms of the pressures of playing sport, pressures of performing, the pressures of being injured, you know, having the kids and being very emotional around that. You know, my relationship with my father that I never had. So my wife has seen parts of me that it's not as if, you know, I'd come home one day and it's all of a sudden I've retired and I'm a changed person. So she's seen parts of me that the world probably hasn't. Well, not probably hasn't, that definitely hasn't. Mm. And I think that that's quite good. So, you know, on that stance, we are in a good place. And now I have retired, there has more mental parts to that than physical. So normally I'd go home and physically from a game I'd be battered. Now I'll go home and say, oh, you know, it's been tough today. She says, well, you know, I said, I've been travelling on my own. You know, it's been 6 hours travelling on my own. And, you know, you might want to get into that. We can talk about it. But having played sport for so many years and the routine that everyone speaks about, that regimented lifestyle, the game at the end of the week, initially when I was coming up to retirement, I wanted that to end. I'd had enough. I'd had enough of routine. I'd had enough of being told what to do. You know, now I'm 18 months in. It's kind of like I do miss a little bit of the routine. So my conversations with my wife are, oh yeah, it's been, yeah, struggled, been on my own a lot today. And as opposed to going home and saying, oh, you know, I'm battered, or she can see I've got a black eye and I've had my head stitched up and stuff like that. So, yeah, so we do, you know, I do talk to my wife, not many other people, about stuff like that, and you two now.
Well, nice. You talking about it will help a lot of people, because obviously the conversation around mental health needs to be destigmatized by guys just getting together talking about it, which is why we're doing this. But interestingly, I'm fascinated by the world of what it is to be a sportsman, and equally fascinated by what it is to be a sportsman that is retired by the age of 35, because it's like one chapter of your life coming to an end. And you said it just then, you look forward to it. You're done with it. You've been doing the same thing for years and years and years. And then to go from having everybody you know all around you, that kind of camaraderie, sportsmanship, that start, middle, and end to your week, like the pinnacle is the game or a tournament, that comes to an end. So was there any kind of help from the club that you had? Saracens was your last club.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of help with your, what are you going to do after retirement? Did you plan for that afterwards? It's a big life change, isn't
it? Yeah, it is a big life change. And I was very conscious, you know, I didn't come from a background where, not that people that play rugby are, spoon-fed is what I was going to say. So I was very proactive in what I did. I wasn't well-educated. I came from quite a tough background. And I was conscious, again, that I had children that I needed to provide for. And I was very proactive in what I did. I would, you know, at the end of my last two seasons, I didn't know it was going to be my last two seasons until the last season, but I was very proactive in what I did. I said yes to everything, but that had its struggles in itself, because I was having to balance playing professional sport, and through fault rather than design, I played the majority of the games at the end of my career at Saracens, when, you know, your headline players like Maro Itoje and George Cruz suffered with injury. So that probably shouldn't have been the case for me. So I had the added pressure of performing whilst also transitioning. And to answer your first question, Saracens are one of the best clubs in terms of helping their players, but it is quite superficial. I think that sports teams know they have to help players because they're in a dangerous part of their life, aren't they? Like you said, you're going from, you know, some people a global superstar or a professional athlete of, you're a somebody, you know, you're on the big stage and you're out there playing, you're on TV, and you know, if you're a single lad, you know, you've got the girls at your feet, you're driving the fast cars, or you haven't got to worry financially, and then you're coming in and everything ends. And again, I've been quite good, I suppose, in rationalising them things and thinking about them things deeply. And I've gone back and forth as well in terms of how much I actually like playing rugby. I know that sounds a ridiculous thing to say. Is I didn't start playing until I was 16, 17. I almost fell into the game with being 6'8" at 15 and could have a scrap, you know, where the game was a little bit old school when I started playing. So for me to finish the game, and probably more, the longer that I'm out of the game now, the more I am kind of missing it. But initially when I finished, it almost felt like a relief. You know, the pressure really told on me to be able to perform, to be able to transition. My wife was pregnant with twins at the time. You know, we'd moved about an hour and a half away from where we were training because we were embarking on our new life after rugby. So, yeah, I'm still in, do you call it a danger zone? Not a danger zone. I'm still in this grey area of, one, understanding who I am now, who the Jim Hamilton going forward is, and transitioning into what, you know, what's going to happen next, where I'm going to be in 5 years' time. And that's something where I'm on my own now. I'm battling with these thoughts, with these problems on my own. I'm trying different things, and yeah, it's quite nice chatting to you two about it. Do you know what I mean? Because you don't get to talk about
it.
You know,
this is exactly our point. We've discussed this so many times.
Yeah,
you get to a point in your life where you start asking questions about yourself, and you're always constantly evolving, whether or not you're a sports star, or if you just left university. There's always a different jump and a transition for men especially, and of course women too. And that's the most important thing. Like you say, it's a problem. It's a change. You have to find different ways. And talking about it is the first step, because you know the process, as we always discuss, is the most important thing. Like not knowing where you're going to be in 10 years isn't necessarily a problem. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. It's the... For me, I would never have thought about that, though, until the end of my career. It wasn't something that... You know, I didn't think 10 years in front. But for some reason now, it's like I do think about it so much more. And something that I didn't have on my hands before was time. I knew what I was doing every single day. Whereas now, I have so much time to think. I'm on my own a lot of the time, and we spoke about it on our podcast, about the difference of the life. The biggest thing for me now is I spent all my life with a group of lads, all my family, and very rarely going to and from training. You're on your own. And that was about it. Mm. Whereas now, this new life that I'm in, the media, doing the podcast, traveling, doing different shows, I'm on my own 80%, I think, I've worked out of my life. And that is something where it's very different. And sometimes it is scary, you know, because you start thinking about different things and then thinking about how you should be feeling. And then, oh, I feel a bit down today. You know, why am I feeling down? And you're trying to put these things together, but when you're a player, you could go, couldn't you? You could go and speak to other lads, or you just get through and you forget anything that you're thinking, just because you're in a moment of testosterone-fueled banter, you know, training, endorphins going. You know, you've won a game, you've lost a game. There's always something going on.
It's almost no time to think.
No time to think. Mm. And I heard Tyson Fury actually speaking on the podcast, and I think he said that when he struggled most was when he had time on his own, when he was on his own. And, you know, that's something that I'm in now in terms of learning. You know, I'm not saying that I've got a mental health problem. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I can really understand and relate to people that have, when they have time on their hands.
I think the big thing with that, which is really interesting, is that, you know, our mind is programmed to keep us safe first and foremost. So it's programmed to think of the issues that we've got, the problems we've got, the threats and the challenges. It's not there to think about the sun shining, because it doesn't need to worry about that. It's programmed to keep us safe. So when you've got time to think, it's churning out, we need to sort this out, we've got to do that, we've got to do this. And suddenly all those thoughts are coming to, and you're like, oh, I've got all these issues I didn't think about before. Whereas when you don't have time to think, your mind couldn't almost get into that stuff. So it's only natural, you know. I think they say something like 80-90% of our thoughts that we have are negative, because it's trying to keep us safe. So it kind of makes a lot more sense. You know, you haven't got time to think. Well, you haven't got all the negativity coming in. You're just getting on with it all. When you're sitting there, your mind's like, right, what have we got to do to make everything safe?
Yeah.
And I think that goes in line with our thoughts on having a purpose, and having the self-respect that comes with having a purpose and trying to find your thing. And I genuinely believe, this is my theory, that we have an abundance of things that we can all do. And like you did, you latched on to rugby and you did that for a career. That was your purpose. That was your daily routine. That's what you had to do. Start, middle and an end. And now you're in that period. And I've been through it 100%. I think my father, when he retired from the police force, went through it. And I think every person in the entire world goes through it at different stages, especially now these days, because of we're going to be living a lot longer, working a lot longer, doing different jobs, always trying to find and readjust to a new purpose. That's where you are now. It's just trying to work out what your thing is.
Of course. And, you know, you spoke about your dad there. My dad was in the forces for 20 odd years. And I mentioned, you know, me and my dad don't have much of a relationship. He was an old school army soldier. Went to the Falklands, went to the Gulf War. Mum and dad divorced in 91, which was in the middle of the Gulf War. And he retired from the army and got a job working for British Telecom over in Northern Ireland. And we started to build a bit of a relationship after he'd come out of the army. He'd had a tough time. He had friends that had died in the military. His mum and dad died at a very early age. So me and my dad had a very cold and not what you'd expect, not what I have with my kids. So we tried to build a little bit of a relationship after he came out of the army and I was playing rugby. And I could see there was something massively missing within him. He was working at British Telecom. He'd lost a sense of purpose, and he went off the rails a little bit. He got involved in alcohol, and I remember he came to stay over. I was playing for Leicester at the time, which is my first club. I remember coming in, and this is a true story that I've never said to anyone before, but he was coming to stay with me. I think he wanted a little bit of company, and he was sleeping on my sofa at my first flat in Leicester. And I come home one day after training, and he was lying on the sofa, and I thought he was dead. And I looked at him, and his face was twice the size. He had two black eyes. He'd been in a fight at the local British Legion pub round the corner from my flat in Leicester. I'm like, what's happened here?
Wow.
Had no idea. And he didn't open up to me at all. Next day, he left, and I didn't see him for about 3 or 4 years after that. And
really?
Really, wow. Yeah. And so off he went, managed to get in contact with him again, and basically he couldn't carry on with the life that he had working for British Telecom, and he'd gone and joined a security firm, an American security firm, that worked out of Afghanistan and Yemen, and he'd gone on a training course in South Africa and had no idea, didn't hear off him for 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
And off he went.
It's definitely a generational thing though, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's, you know, I think we all speak our dad about our dads in a similar way. We are now taught, thank goodness, I think, that actually as a man we can show love, we can be open, we can share emotions. It's not quite, you know, there's still, no doubt the next generation are going to be much more than us, but I feel like we're kind of in between. But you know, my dad certainly also wasn't in touch with his emotions really, and I don't blame him. That was normal to them.
Yeah, of course. And that's where, again, another struggle that I have is with, like, I'm not an overly affectionate person. I'm not overly affectionate with my wife. I'm not one of these guys that walk in the door, give me a cuddle, give me a kiss. But with my kids, I'm so affectionate, like kissing them all the time, hugging them, picking them up, and almost too much. Me and my wife had this discussion, but I've never had a father figure in my life to be able to say or to be able to show me how to bring up kids. Do you know what I mean? A lot of people will look at their dads and they'll say, right, my dad brought me up this way. I've got respect for my dad or respect for my parents or a stepfather or a father figure, which I never had. And you try and do it better or you try and do it slightly different, but they give you a foundation. And that's something that I, even now, like struggle with in terms of bringing up the kids. It's trying to find the right way to do it. So my wife leads on a lot of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're overcompensating for maybe the lack of love that you may have had, and you're projecting that onto your kids then?
Yeah, I think so. When my son was first born, so my first son, Jack James, he's 7 now, I struggled, and I was still playing at the time, and you know, I was down on and off for a while over his first year, because the love that I felt for my son was, I couldn't understand how my dad could just have gone, how he's gone, and how I don't see my dad now. I've not seen him 6 or 7 years. Wow. And so he's not met any of the kids, and I'm thinking, how I love my kids unconditionally is you can't put into words how much you love your children, and how my dad doesn't have that with me, you know. But he was institutionalized, he was in the military, he had a tough life, like I mentioned. His parents died, and he you know, he'd seen a lot of bad things. And you know, I remember us going camping up in Scotland when we were younger, and you know, he was having night terrors and stuff like that, and this was, you know, just after the Gulf War.
Yeah.
So I knew there was issues there, you know, and mental issues. And you talk about mental health.
Yeah.
You know, these military guys, you know, the stuff that they have to go through and the stuff that they've seen is, yeah, you can't even quantify really, can you? So no. I feel for him in that sense. I feel for my dad in that sense, that he's from the old school, never had this. If my dad was here, there'd be no chance, absolutely no chance he'd be talking.
Yeah. It's really interesting because we want to do a podcast with our dads.
Yeah.
And I think that because we are of that generation where the distance between us and our fathers and what they had, what the relationship they had with their fathers, it was completely normal not to hug your dad. Whereas we're growing up going, you know, Bill Murray does it in films and they all do it. I want to do that myself. And like you say, I want to do that with my children. I'm going to be all over it. You know what I mean? How can't you feel that for me? And I think, for us guys, I think it's all very similar. Our baby boomer fathers, and say if my father was in the police force, and probably a similar attitude he had with your father, he had with his father, similar relationship. and it all passes through. But I genuinely believe we are possibly part of a new generation. This is why we're part of something special with the way we look at mental health, of discussing it, of being better people, you know, men trying to find their place in the world and realizing that you have to be more vulnerable. And this is a very important thing, because, you know, to show your kids love is the most important thing. You know, we do this podcast out of love, and it's the easiest thing to do in the in the world, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's, discussing it is so important. And I don't want to ask you something too personal, but like, if you could have 2 minutes with your dad, what would you say to him?
I don't know. I think that, and it's something that I've thought about that I don't speak about a lot. I'd ask him why he was never there. That's what I'd say. Like, I understand my mum's got her side of the story. Like, she says that, you know, he would rather go out drinking when he came back from war and whatever. And I'd want to ask him straight. I'd ask him why, when I invited him to come to the wedding, he didn't want to come. I don't know whether it was a case that he didn't want to see my mum, because I know he loved my mum. And my mum divorced him for the fact that he was never there. He was in the special forces, you know, so he was in a job where he couldn't say where he was. You know, he was gone, he was off the grid. So I'd have that conversation with him. I don't know. I really don't know. You know, I'd want to see how the us stood together looking at each other, what he did, you know, whether he came in and he gave me a hug and whatever. I'd want to give him the opportunity to say something. I do think about it a lot. I think about it every day. And I said to my wife, I think about my dad every day. And it's sad. Like, it is really sad, because you only live once. And, you know, if my dad passed away tomorrow and I never got to speak to him again, how would I feel about that? I'd be incredibly sad. And it isn't a case, it's not a standoff. It's, you know, it's, I'm just not close to it. I don't know him. You know, I don't know him. And again, you know, I look at my son, I want him to have the ultimate respect and love for me throughout the rest of, you know, throughout his whole life. And it's not okay, you know, it's that unconditional love. You know, that connection that you've got. And, you know, I find it really interesting. Like, me and my mum, for example, like, my wife and a lot of friends and stuff, when they see, I don't know what you guys are like around your mum, if you cuddle them or kiss them when you see them. See, we don't at all.
No. Really?
Never, I don't think I've hugged my mum. No. You know, that I can remember. We just don't have that relationship. So...
Oh, me and Pam love a hug.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm very lucky. What about you?
I mean, it's something I've worked on. You know, my mum is an incredible woman. You know, I love her hugely, but I still struggle to show it. Yeah. You know, and I still, and she does, I've got two brothers, and she comes in and hugs us, and we kind of push her away a little bit. I've got something I've worked on. I was like, get off, mum. And I don't know why, because I do love her hugely. And it's something that I've come to realise, and I don't want it to be that way. So I have worked on it, because it is important to me that she knows how much I love her. And my dad is a slightly different one, because, like we've all spoken, to him it's, you know, it'd almost be awkward for him. If I went to him, he'd be like, kind of, what are you doing? We don't do this. But with dads, I've got a philosophy that they absolutely do love us. They just don't understand how to show it. They've never known. And I think, you know, going back to your dad, the special forces, you've got to be stripped of emotion. You can't, if you feel emotion, you can't do the job.
Of course.
Because what you go through. So you've got to cut all of that out. And then almost imagine showing emotion to anyone goes against everything that he's had to learn and live through, because he knows if he did do that, he wouldn't be able to do his job.
Of course. And that's what I think. That's what I think about. Yeah. That's how I reason with it in my head. And I just think now, you know, was that life worth it to be in the situation we're in now? And maybe it's me. You know, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm the one that needs to, I hate saying man up, step up, you know, step up and have that. And through the experiences that I've had through playing sport, you know, you do reason with things better, I think. You know, I think you do think about things maybe from an outside perspective as well as from within.
Yeah, I think compartmentalizing is very important, especially. That's the word. I love compartmentalizing. It's very important, but you have to vocalize that. That's the thing. I try and do it in my head all the time, and it gets me into a squiff. So just saying it out loud helps with me, like in a new relationship, just being vocal. And like with my father, like, interestingly, we're going to talk about dads. My my relationship with my father all throughout my childhood was very kind of weird, because he had a very close relationship with my brother. My brother was a professional swimmer and they went training all the time. My dad was in the police force and like really worked at it. His father didn't show him love really at all. And he did what you did. He threw love at my brother, but in a way that he only understood by going, I'm going to drive you to this game and training, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. It's my love, and, you know. Mm. And it got to a point with me emotionally, when I went through a difficult time, I understood finally my father's way of loving, or the how he'd behave, because he would openly say that he had a difficult time being a dad, didn't know how to show it, and put in love too forcefully in the wrong way, in the wrong direction, not being able to be vocal and loving. So after I went through my difficult time with my own personal mental health, which was depression as such in hindsight, I finally kind of understood my dad. Cut to us watching you doing a podcast in New Zealand last year in 2017, having a great time in New Zealand, traveling around, and our relationship now has blossomed purely because I get it. I get what his dad was like to him. I get how he behaved because of that. And I get how people behave sometimes in their own minds. And the greatest thing I think for us all, and it's very easy for me to say in my situation currently with my father, is that your parents are human beings. They're not superheroes. They are just like us. Mm. You know, my like, I'm an idiot. I'm 35, and to think if I ever have kids is mental. But you know, and I will be a dad one day, and everybody's winging it as such. And I think that's an important thing to remember, is that we all are just human beings, just trying to get our way through life, and understanding that is an important thing, right?
Definitely, yeah.
I think we're going to talk about this actually on a separate podcast, but the role of childhood and the parents have in you, and the shape that you become as an adult later in life, and it's a separate subject. But you know, we don't choose the way that we are now. You know, we're a product of the environment that we've grown up on, the parenting we've had, everything, all the experiences we've had, all help shape us. We don't necessarily choose, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. You just kind of live, and this is how I am. And I think this is the amazing thing with mental health and the conversations around it, is that we don't have to be stuck in that place. You know, mental health is for me is the ability to adapt our mind, adapt our mental state, to change it, to become a better version, so that we're not just stuck in the as a product of all the things that we have or haven't had in our previous existence that we had no control over. And just like physical health, we can change our bodies. You know, you don't have to be overweight. You can go and train. You don't have to be really very skinny. You can go and you can put on muscle in the gym. You can change it. And our mind is the same. You
there
know?
Are tools.
There are tools
for that. And this is the thing. What does mental health mean to you as a two words put together? What is it to you? What does it mean personally to you?
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I think it's the state of mind that you're in day to day, and I think mental health changes. I haven't got a one-liner for you.
Yeah.
I think that it is broad. I think that it is the state of mind, and for me, it's understanding my feelings. I'm the same. You know, you talk about the mental health aspect. I'm a guy that even now, when I'm retired, is straight to the gym. Straight to the gym, get on the bike, you know, do some weights, go for a run, jump on the rowing machine, do a bit of boxing. And yeah, you feel better, but like I said, you know, I'm not doing that when I'm traveling. So for me, it's understanding the mental state that I'm in and being able to now talk about it, speak to my wife, you know, chat to my friends about these different things. But I think mental health is understanding the brain. And I'm speaking very superficially here and not in detail. But for me, it's something that I never, ever, ever thought about. If I could go back in time, my career again, the psychology side of it, which I literally just threw away when I played because I couldn't be asked. I had no idea the effect. It was. I played in an old school time where it was about being hard. That was it. Concussion, you got knocked out. It was about who could get back in the line and make the tackle. That was me. I want to show you. I'm that guy. And I think that I would have been a much better player and maybe gone on to the next level and potentially played for the British and Irish Lions if I had that little bit more about me. And that's a regret that I have. But I'm still in the process. I think you both understand the brain a lot more than me. I'm kind of new to this. I mentioned this when we spoke about it on the podcast. This is something now that I'm in the middle of. 18 months having been out of the game. Mental health staring not just me but guys that we've had on the podcast, guys that I'm speaking to, and they're all guys. I haven't spoke to any women about it. It is guys now that I've chatted to about it, and it's making me think. It's making me think how we can improve things, how we can speak about things. Again, I go back to it. I've got 4 children. I want to be in a place where they're at school, at secondary school, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, as they're going up through these years, these such important years where there's so much, many more pressures now, like you mentioned, you know, the phone, social media.
Yeah.
It's scary. And I want to be in a position, both myself, to have experienced these, to speak to people, to do stuff like this, where there's things in place, there's tools in place, there's an understanding. You're not embarrassed about it. Because, you know, I think back and like, I was down. Like when I played and stuff like that, when I didn't play very well and when I was suffering with injury, I never said a thing. Nothing. Yeah. Just got on with it, you know? And they were some of my toughest days, some of my darkest days as a professional. And I just hope, things are changing now and they will continue to do so.
Do you feel that? Because that's going to be a question I was going to ask. Is there space to be sensitive in a rugby environment? You can't really show vulnerability. You are, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but your robot's there to win the game, you know, week in, week out, isn't it? That's the, if you're not winning, then you might not get selected. You might not have a job. So that's your primary role. It's not to make sure that you're a good human being who enjoys their 40s and 50s. It's to win these games coming up. And if you're showing vulnerabilities and weakness and sensitivity, there's every chance you might not get selected next week because you're not going to fit into the mould of winning necessarily. Yep. Do you feel there is that space?
Don't know.
Yeah, that's the difficulty.
I don't know. If you're asking me to say honestly, I don't think so. No. I do not think we've bridged that gap yet in such a masculine sport. I think that in rugby, they're talking about it. They're wanting to speak more about it. But it's a combat sport.
Yeah.
You know, it's a gladiatorial game of combat, of alpha males. And, you know, you think of rugby, it's one man running at another and the winner is the person who goes the furthest. who gets over that gain line. It's about strength, it's about power. And is there space for vulnerability? I'm not sure. I don't know. And
You're human beings at the same time.
Of course.
That's what's really interesting. You play as a unit. You have to have that unity. And very interestingly, when I was out in New Zealand, I was out there 12 years ago as well, and the culture of rugby there, it's there, is in their DNA. It's very similar to Welsh rugby in a weird way. It's a working class, everybody loves it as their thing. And they have, obviously, the Maori spirituality element to it. They even take it onto the field with the haka. And it's something there's a theory that I believe that their unity, that they play in threes and fours and all that type of stuff, they play as a unit and they seem like they telepathically speak to each other. Maybe it's because the Maori traditions and the religion and the that element of the spirituality then fused into rugby, because they look after each other, they're brothers off the field, on the field. And I know that's the case usually in British rugby, but there's this extra bond maybe there, and it's an acceptance of mental and physical health being one thing in that Kiwi religion. Maybe that's why maybe New Zealand do really well, is because of that understanding of each other on an emotional level as well, instead of just being stormtroopers and robots being thrown out there. It's that, a possibility?
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, there's no doubt about it. New Zealand are the best team, and they probably will continue to be so. And a large part of that DNA, and when you say something's in their blood, it's in their blood.
Yeah.
Right, it is, and you've seen it firsthand with the haka, with that camaraderie. And, rugby as a whole, it is one of them games. I spoke about the individuality of the game in terms of man-on-man. That's just one analogy. But, the teamship that you have there, the camaraderie, is probably second to none on all sports.
Yeah.
New Zealand have that. Whether or not they're... because I still think that there'll be guys in that team that are struggling with mental health.
Right.
And probably haven't said anything. Mm-hmm. Just going back to that first point, I just think that, is there room? Of course there's room. But you look at professional sport now, I mean, we've had some swimmers, and you, Michael Phelps,
yeah,
being one of them. Mm-hmm. Who was the other guy, the TV presenter?
Mark Foster,
he mentioned it as well. I can't think of many footballers, which is seen as a macho
sport.
Yes,
of course.
And I think for me, it's the current crop. Players and athletes seem to come out after.
Mm.
It's when they're in it. Yeah. And
in that same sense, it's the same as homosexuality. It feels as it's a very closeted situation, mental health. And we're not even talking about mental illness. We're talking about mental health, even just talking about maybe we should approach a training session where we have a discussion about mental health. And they don't even want to discuss it because it feels like there's this huge taboo associated with it. That's the fine line between mental health and mental illness, isn't it?
Mm. But I do wonder if it's not really embraced because at the end of the day it is about winning, and there isn't much room for putting your arm, oh, are you okay, oh, you're not okay, well, let's, if you're not feeling great this week, then let's just put, let's make sure you're okay. And it's like, you're all right, aren't you, and you're going to go out there and you're going to hit hard, aren't you, and we're going to win the game, aren't we?
We had a prop called James Johnston, who played at Harlequins. He was a tight head prop, so he was the number three, had to be the biggest player, strongest player on the pitch. And he signed from Harlequins to Saracens on a big deal. And when he was at Saracens, he wasn't quite performing. Didn't really work that hard, was quite lazy. Lads got stuck into him. Coaches got stuck into him. And Saracens, we as a club, ended up offloading JJ. And JJ then went to another club in the UK, and since Worcester. And then he's gone off to France to play now. He plays in Brive in France. Then he came out recently and said that he was struggling with mental health around that time. He had a girlfriend. I don't think he was married. He had a kid. And the woman left him. The woman left him. And as players, I had no idea any of that was going on. And it wasn't a pack mentality. It wasn't because we were being horrible. We judge players in rugby, whether or not it's for Scotland, whether or not it's for Leicester. We were at Saracens at the time, on work ethic. I had no idea. I'm judging him solely on how hard he's working. And he weren't working that hard because he was suffering with mental health and not saying. And, you know, I think that's really sad.
Yeah. Do you think it's almost, you know, you'd almost be selected. His career would then be judged as a result because he's not necessarily mentally tough enough to hack it, people would see.
Of course.
You know?
Mate, exactly. You know, this is why I'd love to sit here and say, rugby, sport, they've got it sorted. You know, they filled that void. They haven't. You know, I played my last season. I had a broken rib. I had two broken ribs. I was playing with copious amounts of painkillers. I had a thyroid disease. I don't know if I mentioned that before. So towards the end of my career, my last two or three games, I felt like crap. Felt like shit when I was playing. I was sweating, overly sweating.
Yeah.
I had the shakes. My hair was starting to fall. I was losing weight really quickly. And it turns out, I found out a month after I retired that I had a thyroid disease. I picked up a hyperthyroidism that I was having to play. And I was kind of telling the coaches that I weren't feeling right. I told the performance director, told the doctor, and it was like one of them where I just got on with it. And with that disease that I've got, I'm now coming into remission, is an anxiety because it's a testosterone, it's a hormone-based.
Is it chemical imbalance?
It's a chemical imbalance. And I'm thinking constantly when I've got this, I'm like, what's wrong with me? And part of one of the biggest symptoms, and again, I spoke about this before, so this isn't new, is the anxiety.
Mm.
And I'm like, you know, why am I feeling like this? You know, if I was traveling to London on the tube, and when I was thinking about this anxiety, it was getting even worse to the point where I was having panic attacks, but I didn't know. I thought I was having a heart attack.
Mm.
So I thought I was about to die.
Oof.
And then I was like, and so in my head, I'm not right. You got to get this together.
Yeah.
And I spoke to the doctor who initially diagnosed me with this and told him. He said, "Yeah, you know, these are part of the symptoms. We can give you some anti-anxiety pills for it." And I spoke about it on the podcast that we did. I had a specialist get in contact with me up in Scotland, and I went up to see him. And he said the levels of the, you know, the toxins in my blood were at a level that he'd never seen, and he was a specialist in this. One of it would have been my size, because I'm 6'8" and 19 stone, and the other part of it was that I was an athlete, and the toxins had to be that overwhelming for them to come out.
Yeah.
And that's why, and he said, like, you know, he said he could have died of a heart attack.
Wow. That's insane.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I think specifically medically now, in that situation, a young man could be anxious and feeling this emotion, and because of the stigma attached to mental health and mental illness, would want to suppress that. But that is actually a medical condition that you can just put your finger on and say, here's the pills, this is the remission time, and this is how long it's going to take. So many men and women will be just pushing that down, which is, you could die because of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's beyond what we usually talk about. That's a serious medical situation, and this is why we need to talk about it.
On that, can I just say, I mean, did you feel, when you were feeling like that, were you thinking, oh God, you know, what the lad's going to make of this? What the coach is not going to pick me now? Am I going to not be able to, because I'm feeling, do I need to, is it worth my while telling the guys, or can I just battle it through and not tell anyone and get on with it?
It got to a stage where I had to say something because my performance was that, it had gone off the boil that much that I had to say something. But yeah, like, it's, and again, I am cut a little bit more from the old school cloth because that's how I was brought up in playing rugby, in terms of you just crack on.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have done, because there's a bitterness a little bit inside of me that says I probably should have said that I'm not quite right on a number of occasions. And Saracens are probably the best club in terms of player welfare and player support.
Mm.
It was a personal thing, you know, and it's about changing the mould now, isn't it? This is what we're saying, because, you know, you look through different teams, and Joe Marler's recently retired from international rugby, and, you know, we just want to make sure that, you know, he's okay.
Mm.
You know, is there more to it? You know, he's a masculine man again. You know, he's knocks about with a Mohican. He's got tattoos.
Mm.
It doesn't matter what you look like. You know, everyone's thinking different things, everyone feels something different, and again, I'll say it again, I just don't think we're quite at the stage yet. In sport, I think everyone will agree that.
Yeah, yeah.
That the things aren't in place. It's become more prevalent, though, really, the mental health side of things.
Yeah.
How long has it been, guys? How long has it been, would you say?
Oh, God.
A couple of years?
That mental health has started to be more spoken about.
It's more spoken about. There's a
one of the big things, I think, is these stats that come into social media exposes things, and there's all these stats, and 3/4 of suicides in this country are men. You know, so that's become a big thing. Suddenly it's highlighted, and men are realising, shit, we can't ignore this anymore. This is black and white. Men are dying, and they're not talking about it. You know, and the fact there was Dan Vickerman, who international rugby player, was a year or two ago, who, Australian, lived a happy life, and no one knew, had an idea.
Two kids,
found at home, you know, not a clue. Yeah. And these kind of things are coming out now, and it's like people realise, however alpha you are, however closed off you are to your emotions, you can't deny that these stats are happening, and it's extremely sad and not right. And one thing I think that we can do to address it at the very basic beginning is having conversations like this, where it's spoken about and it's not frowned upon, and it's letting people know that, hey, none of us are perfect, you know, and it's okay that we say, oh, this is going on and that's going on, and that's actually being the stronger man in accepting it, admitting it, saying, hey, I want to move on from this, I don't want to stay in this place, I want to grow. So I think it is these stats being shared and people understanding, it is now coming alive. You know, conversations
it's
happening.
It's very early stages still, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
We feel like we're just starting to embark on this mental health, especially with men. Yeah. I think where men are now in the world right now, it's talked about a lot more because it's happening. 84 men die a week because of suicide. Mm. And that's a fact, and that's absolutely horrendous.
It's crazy.
Isn't it? It's an eye opener.
But it's actually, it's what, in following what you're saying as well. You know, I've on my blog, I'm very open and I'm very vulnerable in you know, saying I'm not perfect and there's things going on. I've never suffered from depression. Anxiety is always there, not always there, but I felt it. But you know, in sharing and being open and writing about these things, I am aware that some people I know think I'm having a breakdown. You know, going, what's wrong? And it's like, I'm really not having a breakdown. I'm just being honest. You know, being vulnerability is being real. That, you know, people want to live this perceived perfect life, and everything's great. And if no one wants to be the Debbie Downer. No one wants to say, how are you doing? Oh, I'm not great at the moment. It's like, oh, well, I don't want to talk to you then.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, the sooner we realise that none of us are perfect, everyone has days where they're struggling. Everyone suffers from anxiety sometimes. You know, these things are natural. Sooner we can actually, this is a healthy conversation to have rather than, oh God, avoid him, he's a bit down at the moment, or avoid her, then we can all get to a better place and have more real and natural conversations.
It's trying to get it out of people, isn't it? I've got a friend, a good friend of mine, who is suffering from mental health. From the outside, again, seems that he's got the perfect job, works in Formula One, and it was actually his boss who got in contact with me. And he's suffering from mental health. He's depression, bipolar. And I'm not a doctor, so I can't diagnose that he's got these issues, but getting him to talk is impossible. Mm. He will not talk.
Really?
At all. And for me, it's what do you do? It's, you know, I don't know what to do.
Well, yeah, that's
about that. You know, I spoke to his parents.
The awareness for people around people that are suffering, that needs to be a lot better, because we can all be more vigilant and aware. Like, you're trying your best, but you need to know the information.
Yeah.
You need to know what to say and how to say this. You probably know more about this than me, Ben.
Well, I think the big thing, the reason we don't share, the reason we don't talk about things, is because we carry shame. So we're embarrassed, basically. And if we think if we say something, people are going to judge us and go, oh God, you know, that and that. So actually, you know, just in having these conversations and letting people know, it's normal, it's natural, you know, you're not the only one with suffering from depression, you're not the only one, blah, 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 blah. It gives people a bit more license. It's not shameful. You know, it's really not shameful to have things going on.
But in the military, in the special forces, if you say that you're suffering from mental health, you get struck off.
Yeah, well, there you go. And this is the difficulty. And that's where I'm alluding to with rugby as well. It's you know, that there are some professions out there where it's pretty important you don't have these things, because you're not going to perform in the way that's needed. So I can see why it's totally prevalent. You know, your dad going through his career, rugby players, you got to win. You know, and there can't be anything wrong with you. You know, because that might mean we've got less chance of winning in that moment.
Yeah. So, well, it's my industry, TV, is actively encouraged to be a little bit mad. constantly. That's what it is. Is if it's a creative industry and you'll be in this world now after rugby, you're allowed to be a bit nuts, well, yeah. You know, quote unquote nuts. But it's that's just the way it is. Where, you know, you have musicians, some of the best musicians in the world, you know, were just allowed to go off the rails because they produced their best work, which was damaging. You know, it can work both ways, where you're encouraged to be one person or hide in it in another way. But to go back on what you said, where we are with discussing mental health and talking about it and being open and vulnerable is, for me, the most important thing, because I feel so much strength from being vulnerable. Like, I went through it. I did the whole blocking it all up. Oh, I don't think anything's wrong. I told my girlfriend I was going to the doctors because I had a skin complaint, and I was then going to the doctors and then bolting it, going, everything will be fine. This will just wash off when I go on holiday. Then it didn't, and then it all led into one big pile of crap, really, for me, because I kept it bottled up. And then after sharing it, it came to the surface, and I went through a difficult time because then I talked about it, and it came back. I could smell the smells of the day that I nearly killed myself and all that type of stuff. But after sharing that truth, I've never felt, quote-unquote, stronger because of my vulnerability. And that's the secret as such. This is why we want to do this podcast. This is why this conversation is super important, is because after a difficult time, after the hardship, when you do finally speak the truth, the truth genuinely does set you free. Yeah. And therefore, you're a better person for it. So yeah. Going back to sport, if there is a way of just getting in right early, when you first started, when you were 18, 19, discussing how you all feel, just in case you could preempt any sort of pent-up mental, ill mental health or anxiety, depression, etc., would be the better... the sport would be better off for it. Every sort of industry would be better off for it.
Yeah.
Being vulnerable from a very early on instead of just waiting for it to get really bad, yeah. If you know what I mean. The truth sets you free.
Of course. Mm. I think that having the profile of guys, you know, I'm obviously here as a bloke, talking about the vulnerabilities. Obviously, Johnny Wilkinson come out after. Mm. I just think how powerful it would have been if he spoke about it when he was still playing, you know, for young lads to be able to have. And even though that he's come out now and spoke about it, it's still incredibly powerful. Tyson Fury is another one.
Yeah,
raising awareness. A guy who's 6'8". He's a boxer. You know, he's brash. He's, you know, your typical alpha male.
Traveling family background as well, especially that community. He's very tight knit. He's done a very brave thing there.
Yeah, he has. Yeah. And I just think that there's got to be other guys out there, high profile, that can help.
Yeah.
Help this, and women, of course.
No, of course. Well, Davina was wonderful. We spoke to her, and her fascination with us as guys talking about it was wonderful, because I think it's just within women to maybe discuss their emotions a bit more because of the social acceptance of that, and whether that's because of magazines or films or wherever. We are at the stage where it feels like we're coming out. Like this closeted, pent-up shame, like what I think homosexuality possibly is still going through in many parts of the world, in many parts of the UK. It feels like we are coming out after we've left the sport, which is absolutely ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And again, I'm still going through the processes of my mental health and my mental state every day, and now it's become more prevalent. I do think, you know, actually, how am I feeling today? Because, again, what I do and my persona and doing the podcast and doing the media is outgoing, loves a laugh. But I have down days. Mm. You know, I have down days. Am I depressed? No, I wouldn't say that I'm depressed, but I'm down. And I think it's differentiating. There you go. You know.
There's vulnerability right there.
There you go. I've shown
just
it all there.
Compartmentalise.
Exactly. Yeah. Compartmentalises it.
Car park, karaoke.
and it's having that. And again, when I'm on my own all the time, and you know, I was down today, and I'm not saying that. I don't know why. I you know, yesterday I felt great, and then today I just didn't feel like I did yesterday. And it, you know, is it something that I ate? You know, I thought I slept well last night. I did a bit of training this morning.
You knew you had to come and speak to a couple of weirdos.
How did you feel about this today? About talking, the possibility of you opening up and sharing your emotions on a broadcast. How did you feel?
A little bit nervous. I think more for the fact that my education around mental health is probably not where I think it should be. So, you know, I think...
Well, just on that point, sorry to interrupt, no, just, you've never had any education. Why would it be?
Of course.
No one's ever told you anything.
Of course. And that's what I thought. I thought, well, I'm going to come in here. There's no point me saying something, one, that isn't true. And secondly, there's no problem with me not understanding fully about it. And I do feel very lucky as well. I feel lucky that I have a platform to be able to speak about stuff. Mm. I think the big challenge will be for the men and women out there who maybe don't have a platform, you know, who are working in a tough job.
Yeah.
Maybe the family life is not good. They've got money problems. And I think that these are the people that need to be reached out to the most and probably need the most support. It's worth saying as well that when we speak about these things, and we've got a platform, like I just mentioned there, but if anyone wants to speak to me or speak to you guys about mental health, I think that is something that, as guys, we're willing to do. Mm. I think that's the big thing. I think that you have this persona, you know, in TV, you know, in the gym, you know, ripped up to shreds, good looking bloke. I was talking about myself. No, I wasn't. You know, you're playing rugby, but, you know, if someone came up to me in the street and said, "Heard what you said about that. I'm struggling." You know, I'd be the first to put my arm around them and say, "Let's go and talk. You know, give me your number and let's talk about it," because it's a dangerous world we're living. You know, and I can see that. As much as I don't know the stats and details about mental health, I know that it's a big problem. So I think it's worth saying that.
Yeah.
If people are listening and they want to reach out,
you're absolutely right for saying that, and thank you for saying that, because I think a lot of people, I do a lot of shout outs on Twitter trying to get people engaged, and I genuinely mean it when I say, if you see me in a shopping centre and you want to talk to me, this is my favourite subject. This is what I want to talk about. And we should always be like that. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, if we say something and we want you to interact, just ask.
Yeah,
you
please do.
Slide into my DMs and ask me about mental health. Happily talk to you about it at any given time. Same for you, Ben.
Mm, absolutely. No, it's. I mean, as I say, I love this.
But you're a trained coach anyway.
I'm a trained coach, yeah. It's my job, I guess.
Yeah.
But it matters to me. This is powerful, and I love having these conversations. And I love vulnerability. When someone opens up and shares something real about themselves to me, I'm like, I'm all in on them. I see them. You know, I hear them. That's bravery to me.
Yeah.
You know, I love that conversation. So.
And that's where it all starts.
That's where it all starts.
Just through chats.
Yeah.
We ask everybody that comes in, Jim, to go back in time to a moment in their time that's significant, where they could pass on some advice to that younger version of yourself. So. For me, it would be probably when I was 28 and drinking two bottles of whiskey a day. I'd probably say, "Put the whiskey down, sir." What would be a time in your life where you could go back in time and give yourself some free advice?
Wow, you put me on the spot here.
I know. That's the plan.
I think when I played at the highest level, so... around World Cups, around the World Cup, one in particular, in 2011, I worried about a lot of exterior things. I judged, I judged, that's probably one of my worst, how would you say, probably one of my worst attributes is I was a judge of character, and I always look for the worst in people. Around the 2011 World Cup, I had a coach then, that didn't rate me, and I became very judgmental and very outspoken about him amongst the group, and I was a leader in that group, a leader in the team. And I think that if I had that time again, I probably, and if I was to advise my children or my son or myself, I'd say keep your mouth closed and keep your opinion to yourself, because it can have a detrimental factor on a team, on an individual. And again, we joke about on the podcast about different things, and it's quite lighthearted. But I think that being as judgmental as I probably was back then, I wish I wasn't.
Great answer. That's fantastic. Yeah.
I mean, that's it's a proper deep answer as well.
That's
as well.
Very deep answer.
Because I do think about it.
Yeah.
It's something that I think about. But
have you tried to look at that and try and maybe forgive yourself for that?
Again, when you play professional sport, you're a very immature man, mid-20s, you know, coming into the age of 30, that there's not a lot of life experience there. As much as you travel the world, I wish I knew what I know now then. You know, I wish I knew. I know hindsight's great. It really is. I am a much better man, a better human being I am today than I was before. And having kids has helped that. You know, my younger self was, you know, I was a poor guy growing up. I was in foster care for a while. I took everything out on my mum that my dad wasn't there. I was angry with life. I lived for going out on the piss with the lads. You know, the minute I got a big contract, I got 50 grand a year. I went out spending money, bought myself a car. I look back, if my son behaves like that, and hopefully he'll listen to this one day, I'll be pretty disappointed, you know? And I just think that if I had my time again, I just probably wouldn't have acted like that as well. You know?
Yeah.
I think that, and again, I'm not saying this, I genuinely believe it, and that's one of the reasons I've come on here. Having time for people and being a good person. You know, if my son and my daughters, you know, they have an opportunity to go on and be a tennis superstar or play basketball or whatever, but they're going to be a shit person with it. I'd rather them be a much better person and not have a job. I really would. I think there's so much in saying of being a decent person, you know? And again, my experiences have shown me that.
That's incredible. I mean, it's been a real pleasure to hear you talk. It's because there is so much to you, and you get a sense of this, it really matters. You know, you're not bothered about so much of the bullshit, excuse my language, but in the materialistic stuff, you're worried about the people, and you can see in you're here to show up as to be a good person and to help others, and to that's living for you. And I think that's a really big thing in today's world. It's so much is based on success and who are you, what do you do, that defines you. Actually, nothing defines you more than being a good person. You know, that's what we're about, and that's, if you want to feel good about yourself, be a good person.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and again, looking back at the kids, if I see my kids doing something, helping another kid, being nice to someone, that makes me so much prouder and happier than if he scores a goal in football.
Yeah.
Or if she swims a length faster than anyone in the swimming pool. And I genuinely mean that. I think that there's a lot to say.
Yeah.
For being a good person. It's what the world needs now, doesn't it? Because there are some bad people out there.
Yeah.
Compassion and kindness.
It's amazing.
All the way.
I really love that.
All love.
All love, brothers.
All love here.
It's all hold hands. Sod that. Oh, you were going in as well, Jim. You were going in.
Exactly. I was in the moment.
He was in the moment. Namaste.
Yeah, I was in the moment.
So. Now I stick around for a cup of tea. Jim, thank you so much for coming in today, and thanks for sharing your stories, mate.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Really appreciate it.
Cheers.
Well, I hope you understand what we just went through, everybody. Thanks for listening, and thank you so much, Jim Hamilton, for sharing. Just sharing. That was a special moment.
Do you know, I knew I'd like Jim before. I've heard a lot about him, and everything I've heard, here's a guy that shows his heart. And he came on and did exactly that. And just to hear him speak was, I've got so much time for this man. I loved him.
Yeah. And as I said in the intro to this, he epitomizes what we are trying to do. He shared, and I hope you could take something from it if you were listening, because that was a guy, as you said earlier, Ben, he's 6'8".
Yeah.
He's a monster.
Yeah.
Full of tattoos, come from a sporting world, you know, surrounded by masculinity. And what he did then was massive. And I was incredibly brave. And that just goes to show that there is a lot of hope out there. And he's probably given a lot of people hope as well. And thank you so much for that, Jim. You're amazing.
Jim, loved it. Thank you so much. Hope you guys enjoyed listening. Please rate, review and subscribe if you like us even a teeny weeny little bit.
Yeah.
We are on Twitter. It's TMP Podcast. Instagram, it's The Naked Professors. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip? elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.